We'll call the committee meetings to order. Remind everyone, if anyone needs it, that we are still in a pandemic, and we have several of our readings today on Zoom call. And those of us that are here, please remain vigilant in our everyday activities, and we will remain masked up in our meeting today. So, Regent West is with us via Zoom, and I'll ask her to do the roll call, please.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Chair Bale.
Present.
Regent Ball.
Present.
Regent Brinkley.
Regent Brinkley is going to be about 10 minutes late. He will be here later.
Okay. Regent Henson.
Present.
Regent McKinney.
Present.
Vice Chair Milliken.
Here.
Regent Nichols. Not present. Regent Spiller.
Present.
Regent Thomas. Okay. Secretary West, I'm here, and Regent Winningford.
Present.
And we have 8 regents present representing a quorum of the board.
Okay, thank you very much. We will go directly to the Academic Affairs Committee, and Regent West, you remain in command.
Okay, thank you very much. We have one action item on the agenda today for the Academic Affairs Committee, and it is a request for approval of faculty and merit status for the faculty that are listed below that was in your packet. It's a two-page list, and these faculty members have been recommended by any faculty, department heads, junior directors, and deans to be awarded emeritus status. I've served the university for at least 10 years and have had distinguished records of achievement and service. Is Provost Fisher present today?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, did you have anything further that you wanted to discuss regarding these appointments?
I just wanted to make one correction to the list. The correction was that when we submitted it, there was a clerical error. The office discovered after submission of the board agenda that Dr. Lawrence Snyder received the rank of professor as part of his appointment as Potter College Dean in 2016. And please accept the friendly amendment that Dr. Snyder's emeritus title be Professor of Philosophy and Religion Emeritus. And in addition, I guess I would add that in most cases, the provost would read 2 or 3 or 4 lines about what each individual and why they would be put in as emeritus, but we would be here for the next 3 hours if I was to do that. So I will, as was said earlier, that they have served 10 years and they do have distinguished records and should be considered for emeritus.
Thank you, Provost Fisher, and President Gavone has also recommended awarding the individuals on the list above emeritus status. Is there any further discussion about the emeritus status?
Certainly, I would like to just note that I think I counted up 57 people on this list, and if they'd all served a minimum of 10 years, we're talking 570 years of service as a minimum. And the one in my department was 45 years. So we may be looking at 1,000 years of service here that we're recognizing here with emeritus appointments. And obviously with VSIP, you know, we're having this kind of opportunity here. But just the tremendous amount of work that they did and the contributions they made to build the programs and opportunities that we have for our students, I think it's just important to note that.
Thank you. And I should have called for a motion for approval of emeritus status before further discussion. So does anyone have a motion regarding this?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Second. Is there any further discussion?
Reggie West?
Yes.
I also want to join Reed and Spiller in expressing both my appreciation for the investments of these individuals' lives in the work of the institution. This is a remarkable collection of folks who've been committed to and served the university with distinction, and we certainly will miss them. And when it's appropriate and we can gather in a way that is more typical, we will have an appropriate celebration for all of them. So I don't want anyone to think that we're just passing over. And I look forward to the first emeritus luncheon where we get to all gather together in person again, hopefully in the spring semester. This is as challenging as losing that kind of institutional history and memory is for an organization. Regent Spiller also suggested, and I agree, that it also presents opportunities for new eyes, for fresh blood, and for us to shift human capital across the organization. And so you'll hear conversations about that in the coming months as we think about what the VSEP program creates for the institution. You've seen some portion of that, and you will see some portion of that with salary shifts and reorganizations. You've seen parts of the university that do not require the time that the academic units require to shift and restructure. But I again, want to end with my great thanks for all these individuals' service to the university. It's important to note that and to thank them for the investment of their professional careers at WKU.
Any further discussion or comments? And I also echo your statements, President Caboni. This is a very long list of very distinguished men and women that have served the university very well. And again, the board appreciates your service as well. So there being no further discussion, I would call for a vote on the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. The motion passes. All right. We also, that was the only action item that we have on the agenda, but we have three information items. And is that, Provost Fisher, are you going to speak to those information items?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, thank you.
So I should have, the first information item has to deal with kind of giving you a background of academic affairs and telling you where we are today as we move forward. And I want to first thank you for allowing me to talk to the regents today at these committee meetings. What I want to talk about is the Division of Academic Affairs. Specifically, really what I want to talk about is, one, what's the role of academic affairs? Two, what's the structure of academic affairs? I also want to talk a little bit about what's the relationship with the Board of Regents, and then tell you what I've been doing and what we've all been doing in academic affairs since I arrived on July 7th, 4 months ago, a little over 4 months ago. Next slide, please. So when you look at academic affairs, it's a huge operation, but it really divides into three groups that are three leadership groups that are working together to continually make the university better. That is the academic side of the house. It has the provost office, which has the assistant and associate provost, which handle the day-to-day activities such as faculty issues, as well as what would be curriculum, as well as DEI issues and assessment. You also have a group of directors that have twofold operations. Parts of the directors run things such as the Honors College, as well as the Gatton Academy, while other directors, in a large number of cases, do institutional research and run CIDL, which is faculty development. And lastly, you have at the bottom probably the most important group, or one of the most important groups when you're talking about leadership in academic affairs, which are the deans, which are the CEOs, in a large number of cases, of the colleges, as well as the library. And that group is who translates everything that we think of as how to move the academic affairs forward down through the chairs to the faculty, and we move the university in a direction. This only works if all of these groups are on the same page and have the same vision and have the same strategic plan as they're moving forward. And that strategic plan relates to the university's strategic plan. Next slide, please. So let's talk a little bit about the academic affairs role. The Division of Academic Affairs is responsible for academic priorities as well as setting strategic initiatives. It also has the allocations to those priorities and strategic initiatives to make sure certain ones move forward at a greater pace than others. When you look at the provost, and I'm really talking about academic affairs, they have to be able to work with the president, the other vice presidents, the faculty, the staff, the students, to be able to move this university forward. And some of the areas of importance where they're moving the university forward are things such as creating high-quality programs, making sure that we have the best possible programs for the students, as well as associated with those programs, making sure they have learning opportunities both inside and outside the classroom that are high impact. In addition, what we are doing is trying to improve and help faculty in teaching. Teaching is an ever ongoing evaluation and move in a direction, and the way people teach changes over time, and we use faculty development and CITL to try to help faculty improve their teaching so that we give the best opportunity for our students to learn. In addition, what we see is that we want to recruit and retain diverse faculty, and we're working with HR and other groups to come up with ideas like relationships with HBCUs, different places to put out applications so that we get a broader pool to choose from to increase diversity on campus. But it's not just creating and getting them on campus. What you have to do is, once you get them on campus, is figure out a way to keep them. But not keep them, give them the tools they need to be successful. They really need to be successful here, and if they're successful, WKU is successful. In addition, what you see is that we establish all academic policies, and then we administer those academic policies. An example of that would be faculty evaluation, promotion, and tenure policies. And last, probably the most important, in this time where higher education is ever changing, what we have to do is be at the cutting edge of that as a group, thinking about what are the innovative ideas that we can put in so that we can continue to move forward and make progress. And with that overarching goal being to create a great higher education learning experience at WKU, but at the heart of that, have student success. That is, the students doing well and being able to ultimately graduate. So, academic programs. So, just to give you a hint, there's over 200 academic programs on this campus that are administered in academic affairs. The true number, I think I got it yesterday, is 206. So it's 206 programs. When you look at undergrads, you're talking about associate and bachelor's majors or programs, as well as minors and certificates. While for graduate students, you're talking about master's, doctorate, and specialist degrees, as well as graduate certificates. So there's a huge number of programs out there being administered in those five colleges where we're making sure that those programs are quality and are making continuous improvement. Next, please. So the key to these programs is the faculty. The faculty on this campus are invested in this campus, and I'm going to tell you, are invested in teaching. They understand that we're a normal school and that the history of this school is an education school. And it's this instructional faculty that makes a difference for us, and it's this instructional faculty that makes these programs excellent. And the total number of faculty of instructional faculty are 1,073. And when you break it out, you see full-time is about 59%. You see part-time is about 40%. And 1% are graduate teaching assistants. So I'd like to take a little bit closer look at full-time faculty. If you look at full-time faculty by tenure status, what you see is about 57%
of the faculty are tenured, 20% are on track to be tenured, and another 23% are ineligible. And they're ineligible because they sit in lecture or instructor lines within the college in those areas. That's a total of 648 faculty that are in tenure or tenure track lines in most cases. And we have a commitment to them to make sure that they're successful as they move on to all people teaching for us at this point. So, at the heart of these programs is every time you start to talk about programs and you look at the huge number, one of the words that shows up is accreditation. And accreditation is incredibly important in two realms. It's important for the university to be accredited, and it's important for programs to be accredited. By being accredited, what they're saying is that the quality of those programs in the university are of the highest possible. And what we really have to do is take a notice of that. So overall, this higher education entity is accredited by SAC-COC. And the last time we had a huge SAC affirmation or reaffirmation on this campus was in 2015. They came, it went well. That we got 10 years before the next one. And when we look at the 10-year period, they come about halfway through to do a midterm. And in the halfway midterm, we got an outstanding review. So we're in good shape at this point. And what I want to kind of explain to you is a couple of other things. When they do these 10-year reviews, you have to have a QEP. And a QEP is a quality enhancement program. That is some university-wide project that advances student learning. In the case of the last time we did it in 2015, it dealt with evidence and argument. In other words, what we were designed was to develop student abilities in these three specific areas. We were teaching our students how to gather evidence and to figure out whether it was good evidence or bad evidence. We were making sense of that evidence, in other words, figuring out how to analyze that evidence, and then ultimately take that evidence and create a cohesive argument. And how we did that was putting those modules throughout the colonnade, so over the four-year period, you would get multiple opportunities to do each one of these parts, so that when you left, you had that skill set. So that's overall the university accreditation. But we have specific accreditations, and there's a page on the WKU website that's huge with a gigantic number of them, and what you will see are places like engineering are ABET accredited. What you will see is nursing is ACEN accredited. What you will see is the business college is accredited by, AACSB. So all of those tell us that we have quality programs that are available to our students. So how do we interact? How do we spend time together? And what will I bring to you as the Board of Regents? Some of the things are, I will ask in some cases to approve and deny tenure and promotion recommendations. Additionally, create or terminate academic programs and degrees. In addition, establish or abolish academic units. Approve changes to university admissions and graduate standards. And lastly, what I plan on doing is bringing information items. I think you need to know what Academic Affairs is working on and where we're headed into the future as we move along in this process. So next, I want to bring an information item. So here we are. I walk on campus July 7th, and it's like go. So it's like drinking from a fire hose, right? That's day one, and it's still like that right now. But in all cases, what we had to figure out was an academic affairs roadmap, or figure out the goals that would be done in academic affairs. Now, the goals I'm going to show you in a couple minutes aren't finished, but they're the start of what we think of as important areas that we need to work on to improve WKU. So the first thing we had to do when we did the goals was go back to the strategic plan. They have to relate to the strategic plan of the university or it doesn't work. We all have to be in unison to do that for all of that to work. In addition, since I came from outside, what I knew about WKU was mostly that they had beat us in football and basketball lately. So what I really needed to do at that point was to get a sense of the university and get a sense of the culture of the university and where it was in the whole process. And the way I've been doing that is going around and doing listening and discussion sessions with faculty, staff, and students. And in those sessions, as I wrote down everything that was said, there's some things that come out that go across all of those sessions. And those are the things that have helped me determine what would be the goals for academic affairs. So the first one is, the people here absolutely think this is an extraordinary place. And they truly love this place. So there's a true connection, and I think what Shane said a minute ago is perfect for that, right? The person that took VSIP in his area was here 40 years. That's the type of place it is. You come, you may say, I'm only going to be here for 6 years, 5 years, 4 years, and you wake up someday and it's 27 years later and you're still here. So I think that's the type of place it is. In addition, what you see is that the belief is that it's come a long way over time, that it's gotten much better over time. And it's a gem. And what they're excited about is that they think that past, which was growth, is momentum to take that next leap to be a better institution. And then some themes show up every time we're in one of these discussions. I hear people talk about student success. I hear people talk about academic quality. I hear people talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. I hear them talk about research and creative scholarship. And then you get to the other ones. I hear them talk about doing a better job of taking care of where our location is and being more in the location we are. I hear about valuing the people that are on campus that have made this place great. And I hear about financial stability into the future. So all of those are the things that I've heard over the last 4 months. Now, again, I'm going to mention, I'm not done. I'm already scheduled, I believe, through the spring to spend significant amounts of time with departments, in areas with more students. So that's just the beginning. But what it's allowed me to do is sort of create, go back one, is sort of create the goals to start with and get us working in a direction. So the first one is to increase recruitment, retention, and degree completion. And what we decided is that, and I think we all knew this already, was that recruitment is important. Having students on campus is incredibly important. And that's only done if everybody's recruiting. So what we have done is work with ESC to begin to recruit and create strategies for the departments and the colleges to recruit in unison with ESC to try to give the student the whole message as to why you should be at WKU. In addition, goal two is to recruit and retain a diverse community of outstanding faculty. Well, I think to do that, you have to do a few things. The one we've been working on is human resources and DEI is to recruit high-performing academic personnel that is hopefully of diverse background. What we've been doing, again, is identifying different ways to recruit. That is personalized recruiting, visiting HBCUs, thinking about where we put our ads, all of those kinds of things that create relationships that help us to get diverse communities in to this area. In addition, we also know, and the word we always get is our compensation. So what we're working on and what we're part of is trying to come up with a faculty compensation model that will lead us into the future to take care of some of the challenges associated with that. In addition, we have to embrace what the word is that SACs always use, which is continuous improvement in our what would be our academic units, as well as monitoring them. I don't think you can just ignore them until it gets to a bad point. We need to monitor them all the time. And we've come up with an academic program review, kind of a two-pronged way to do that, and I'll talk more about that at the end. Goal four is equity, diversity, and inclusion, but I'm more interested in culture. To have that culture on campus where it's an inviting culture that people and students and faculty want to be at. And one of some of the things we've done is one WKU. Others include the Institute of Inclusive Teaching, or it's been changed to the Inclusive Teaching Academy now, which is faculty in workshops for a whole semester to ultimately figure out how to do equitable pedagogical, what would be practices. In addition, we've talked with ISIC about doing this bias training for everybody who comes on campus and their orientation at this point. Next. So in number five, it's promote enhanced research and creative scholarship. So we started by reinstituting the internal grants as we walked on campus to kickstart research on this campus again so that it moves forward. It's not only grants for faculty, but it's grants for students. And what it really creates is that perfect teacher-scholar model that we're looking for, where faculty and students are working together to answer and ask questions and do creative activities. In addition, we're doing much more professional development and training, especially related to grants and grant writing. And lastly, expanding WKZU's reach. In other words, as this area grows, our role in this area has to grow. And that means that we have to spend time with the people who are growing out there to ultimately figure out how we can help them grow while helping ourselves be a better institution. And we're working on that as we speak. And then, my favorite, back to SACS, right? SACS COC and accreditation is incredibly important for the university. And what we know is that 2025 will be here in a blink of an eye. So what we have done is started SACS reaccreditation, and we will start the new QEP program process in January to make sure we're ready when 2025 comes. And lastly, Colonnade's in there because one of the things we have to make sure of is that we're really assessing what Colonnade does. And the reason I say that is Colonnade has a huge role on this campus. And their role is to provide students with what I think of as literacy, as competencies that are needed as they move out into work. It's not just that you're a biologist, but you're maybe a biologist with soft skills that allow you to be flexible when you leave here so that you can have a multitude of different jobs over your lifetime. And lastly, goal seven, if it comes. Well, we missed it. Is to move to a functioning division. So what is that we have spent a significant amount of time getting ready and working with RAMP so that RAMP works for us and allows the colleges and allows the academic affairs to move forward using RAMP. And we believe in efficiency. So we're working on efficiency related to implementation of electronic processes. One we finished is FLAC that's being used around the university right now. And the second one is we're doing a pilot in chalk and wire to see if we can get rid of all the paper that's associated with my favorite, continuance, tenure and promotion, and annual evaluations, which is, if you don't know, you get things like this every time for every person. And hopefully it'll be an electronic form that you'll be able to just tap and look at. So we're working on lots of efficiencies to become much more efficient in the academic affairs. So let me finish by saying, we're committed to giving the highest quality learning experience to the student. And that means we have to have continuous improvement of our academic areas, and everybody knows that. In addition to that, we also have to help the faculty be successful. We have to do things that make the faculty successful and want them to be here and create a culture that they want to be here. And together, if you do that, I think you turn Western Kentucky into a first-choice institution greater than anybody within 90 or 100 miles of us right now. And with that, I'm going to take any questions.
Wow. is what I say. And you said you've been here 4+ months. It's 3+ months, and you've done all that.
We're trying. It's not me. It's the whole group, by the way.
But I've been on the board longer than anyone at this point. I can say that's one of the best presentations that I've seen in the last 8 years.
Thank you.
and thank you for coming on board and got your running shoes on.
I do. Every day.
There are so many parts to your presentation that require thinking, but I love the evidence-based and argument of the universities. Aren't about the truth, then nowhere is. And to operate on evidence-based theories and learn how to argument based on that is critical to these students individually and to all of us.
Yep.
So thank you very much for a great presentation.
Great.
I would just add, given your short period of time here, and our opportunities to interact both in a private meeting but then also in public forums, I've appreciated the culture you've set, the open, transparent culture, and your ability, or not your ability, your willingness to answer questions and engage with whomever happens to come in your way. So certainly will continue, but I do appreciate the tone that has been set so far.
Great. Thank you very much. So I guess I have the next two informational items, too, if there's no other questions. I'll just stand and do them if that's okay. One is I said I would come back to program review. So one of the things that we felt when I got here and we had long discussions with everybody in academic affairs was we needed to do a better job at program review. And what we meant by doing a better job at program review, what we came up with was a two-pronged system. One is called a sustainable evaluation, which is done every year on all programs across campus. And it uses 7 metrics to measure whether you're sustainable or not. And if you get a certain score, or I guess it's if you get certain things that ding off, you will be given a 1, which means we need to review you. What we ask you to do then is to basically fill out a sheet that has questions that asks you, how can you improve over the next 3 years? What can you see doing that will allow you to be more sustainable into the future? And that's done in conjunction with the departments, the faculty, the deans, and then the provost office. In addition, most areas do a 5-year program review of all programs on a rotating basis. And we did a CAPE 4 years ago, which was all programs, but we really haven't got on that 5-year routine, and we're on that 5-year routine. And we'll be on that, as I hope, of January, to be able to function into perpetuity on what we have decided. So sustainability helps us identify programs that may need help and help them, while the review is a constant review that allows us to see where everybody is headed. So that's the other informational item. The other one was Colonnade. Colonnade is, if you're a comprehensive institution, I truly believe that your liberal arts program, in this case the Gen Ed program, is at the heart of that. And it has a set of skills and literacies that come out of that that are the soft skills that lots of places are looking for when you go out to get a job. What we have to do is make sure that's happening. So we're in the middle of a Colonnade kind of overview of it, looking at the courses that are in there, having discussions with what are the courses we could add that would add to the Colonnade and those types of things as we move forward and do a new assessment of Colonnade. So those are my two other information items.
Now, I guess I had one question.
Sure.
I'd like to ask, and again, you've given us so much to think about, but as part of all of this, what do you see our Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning playing an even bigger role than it have? And that's an area, since we do have so many new regents in the last few years, we took a tour of that maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and it may be time to take a look at what they're doing there again. But
it's an incredibly timely question. Yesterday I was sitting with Marco, who runs that, and we probably had an hour and a half conversation about what's the future look like and how much more can they take on and how do we continue to build it. Because in my mind, I'm going to tell you, it's the best faculty development center that I've seen on any campus that I've been on so far in my life. And I think it can be the I think, the best in the country as we move forward. And it has to play a bigger role, right? Because what used to change glacially now changes in minutes. So it has to play a much bigger role in helping faculty stay up to date, but helping everybody to be better at what they do.
I would think implementing what neuroscience is telling us on how people learn and how they return, how you retain learning,
yep.
That center.
Well, and you saw it up here, right? How to, in most cases, do inclusive teaching, right? I mean, that's a brand new topic. 3 years ago, that didn't even exist, and it's exploded in higher education, and we're at the forefront of how to do that.
So I have another question for you. So
sure.
Kind of integrating some of the information today.
Yeah.
And one I hadn't prepared you for at all.
It's okay.
As we've got the information later on the personnel actions, and we see all the adjuncts in there, at least through a certain period of time. And I know Dr. Bale has had us reading a book that talks about the growing use of adjuncts in higher education, which has been a trend that's growing for a while. And then looking back at all these faculty meritizations, these VSIP appointments, and you stated your data showed 57% of our courses or our faculty are full-time, I believe that was.
That's true.
So how do you feel about the balance of full-time versus adjunct? Where are we now? Are we struggling this year? Is there a change in that because of all these retirements, or do you have goals?
Sure.
I know, for example, having done ADCSB accreditation, they have accreditation guidelines that limit that, but not all colleges do.
Well, so. That's absolutely true. And I don't
59% full-time, 57% of those are 10 years.
Something, yeah.
So when you look at it, that's a great question, and you look at, it depends on the program, and it depends how the program is functioning, right? If you're a program that deals with, let's just say, and I'm just making up a program, business, but it deals with a specific small area of business, there may be leaders out there that are better to be here than just faculty who have had years of experience and can use that years of experience to help the students get better. So I think that mix depends, right? I think if you go out and you look at most institutions, that mix, we're right at about where the mix is for most institutions. That is that round 60 to 40, and that's kind of where people are. And when we run our sustainability, it's a 60-40 mix that we look at. And then we ask the departments, does that make sense for you, or is it because you're a special program that you could have a different mix and make decisions built off of that? So I think it's decision, but we're right where I think we should be.
Good. May I address that?
Ms. Chair.
When you think about what an applied research university does and the importance of applied learning at WKU, I think that it's invaluable for us to strike that balance between theory and practice. And the place where we want to be is where students are absolutely have their education grounded theoretically, but also have an experience where they take that theory and put it into good use, which helps them both understand the theory better, but also prepares them for what comes later. And so I do think that mix is perfect. So how do you have folks who have not just, have students exposed, not just to faculty who've been in the classroom for their entire career, which is important, but how do you also expose them to individuals who have long success in practice and help to bring those two things together to make it illustrative? And I'll go back to that FFA quote that I use constantly, learning to do and then doing to learn. And I think that's why you get that strong mix, particularly with a place that's focused on applied learning.
All right. Chair West.
Anything else? Not, thank you very, very much for the presentation. It was great. It was very informative.
Thank you.
I believe those are all the items on the agenda for the Academic Affairs Committee.
You gave us a great program this morning. Thank you very much, Chair West and Dean Fisher, or Provost Fisher.